Hello, this is Dr. Stephen Greer, and welcome to Conversations with Dr. Greer. And we're here every 2 weeks to bring you an update on the Disclosure Project and the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and also the work we're doing on new energy with the OrionProject.org. And I'm joined today with Linda Willits, and we're going to be discussing and actually announcing for the first time publicly the formation of a Council for Interplanetary Relations. And we're going to get into why this is needed for the planet and what it is that you can do to help with this process. And it's really quite a pleasure to be able to finally discuss this after 20 years of working with CSETI. And you can see what we've been doing over the years at CSETI.org. We have enough momentum that has built between the interstellar civilizations visiting Earth and our group to say that it is time now to form and actually compose a council of humans who would establish policy and establish open contact with these civilizations in lieu of the governments of the world who have failed to act. I want to explain a little bit around the concept of this, and this is really important. And if you go to disclosureproject.org, you'll see that in October, about almost exactly 6 months ago, we released the overview cover letter that I wrote to President Obama and the administration. Now, the actual briefing was thousands of pages of materials and documents and photographs and top-secret government documents, a few of which we covered last time on this show. But in it were a set of recommendations. And if you look at that letter, you'll see that one of them is that a Council for Interplanetary Relations be formed that would be an international body to develop a proper response to the fact that we're not alone in the universe and that we're being visited, and that this needed to be done within about a year, or that CSETI would proceed in forming such a council independently. Well, it's been now over a year since this was given to the Obama administration. And I have to point out here that there are people on our team who work directly with very senior people in the administration. So this was given, hand-delivered to very senior people. And the year has passed, and while we can't predict whether or not there will be further action or action that will be known by the public on this level by the Obama administration and other countries or through the United Nations, we feel it's very important not to delay the formation of this council. And the reason for that is that since we first sent this letter to President Obama, and it was given also to his CIA director, Leon Panetta, and also to the Secretary of Defense, Bob Gates, as well as other very senior people in the administration, there has been an escalation in contact that we have had with the ETs, and in a way that is very promising and very positive, because it really has involved in the last 2 years, since the Orion transmissions took place in Joshua Tree National Park, there's been a very steep exponential growth in the amount of contact and the intimacy of contact, which has been reaching a crescendo just in the last 3 or 4 months since November of 2009, this past November, when we had ET craft that visited us at Joshua Tree National Park, and there were transdimensional ET beings that were there and that were photographed by members of our team. As you know, from if you go to disclosureproject.org and CSETI.org, you will see that there's a photograph of this ET being that is just hovering right outside our circle, just a few feet outside the circle, and it's looking right at the camera, and it's a fascinating presence. To my knowledge, nothing like this has ever been imaged before by a contact group ever in the world to this level of clarity. It is not a photoshopped or hoax thing. We know who took it. We were there when it happened. We have many people who can attest to it. The question then becomes, what are the ETs saying? Well, it means that the veil is getting very thin and the time is getting very short to to where there'll be a more and more open contact between humans and human civilization and these extraterrestrial civilizations. We were then, as you may have heard, Linda and I discussed a few weeks ago after our trip to this island in the Gulf of Mexico in Florida, Boca Grande Island, and we had at least three separate ET beings that were imaged and actually photographed during those meetings and had some extraordinary contact that took place. This sort of crescendo, this building of contact on multiple levels, where there are craft that are manifest, but also transdimensional effects, is certainly a countdown to the transformative changes that are coming. And that's why this most recent book we released in October, Contact, Countdown to Transformation, has that as a subtitle. The contact, the Countdown to Transformation is well underway. And we think it's very important that there be a group of wise elders and people who are on this planet who are dedicated to a peaceful future, both on Earth but also in space, who come together to represent our people and the planet Earth with these civilizations. This is something that obviously should have happened probably in the 40s or 50s had the subject not been subsumed within the world of secrecy. And unfortunately, it was. And it has become so dysfunctional within the governments of the world and even the United Nations. And there's so much politics at play to try to keep this whole issue secret that we feel that it's now time to form the Council for Interplanetary Relations that would foster positive, open, mutually beneficial, and peaceful relations between human civilization and these other interstellar civilizations. And we want to formalize, take a formalization step to do that. So we're announcing that this is what we will be forming this year. And we're asking for everyone listening to the World Pooja Network to think of how they can assist in that process. Who are the people that you may want to nominate to be involved with this council or to be on various advisory boards, whether it deal with technology or the social aspects of contact or the aspects that would deal with culture, art, science. There are a whole lot of divisions that we are in the process of formulating that will be a part of the concerns of this council, because it's very important that we have this ability to make peaceful contact and have an open, increasingly open relationship between our neighbors in space and Earth. And it's been delayed for far too long. And so now is the time to do it, because clearly from what we've been doing as a very sort of, again, an unfunded research project and now going for 20 years, going out all over the world making contact, thinning of the veil, as I call it, the quickening that's happening. And in fact, this is one of the themes that Colin Andrews spoke about at his talk at the Rio Rico in October conference that we're going to repeat again this year, where we're going to be really focused on contact and these sort of issues, is that what he observed in England in the summer, in July of 2009, was an unprecedented level of contact going on, where there were spacecraft seen and ET beings that were actually seen in the fields near Silbury Hill, and where actually police saw these and actually tried to chase them, unfortunately, and rather unwisely, I think, and clumsily. But nevertheless, you know, it's quite clear that in some of these places around the world that there is a real building, the likes of which he had never seen in his over 20 years of work in the crop circle aspects, and which, as the director of CSETI, I have never seen this level of contact just in the last few months. So something is afoot, and I think that it's very important that we now announce that since the United Nations and the United States and other governments have failed to announce such a council and formulate a proper response to these interstellar civilizations, that we the people need to do it. And just as like we the people formed the United States, we the people need to form this council. And it is going to be an international body. It's going to be one that's dedicated to universal peace, and it's going to be one that will have specific programs that further those objectives of universal peace and open contact. So this is the first public event where I'm announcing this on the World Pujan Network. I wanted to do it here because of the large number of enlightened people who listen to this broadcast. And we're going to really want your feedback and input on people who you feel should be on this council, and particularly any senior representatives in various walks of life around the world who should be approached that maybe some of you listeners know personally, or you yourselves are, to be included in the various advisory capacities that this council will need. So we're opening this up today and discussing it, and we think it's a very timely event. And in fact, you know, Linda's helping to organize. For the first time in 10 years, we are going to be going back to England, to the ancient sites of England, to places such as Stonehenge and Silbury Hill and Avesbury, in the area of Wiltshire. And Linda, you may have the information on when we're going. I can't recall.
Yes. We're the dates of the training. It's an Ambassador to the Universe training, July 16th through 23rd. That's a Friday to a Friday. And like Dr. Greer said, it's the first time in 10 years that we've been back to England. And it's all because of the heightening of activity. And Dr. Greer said that he feels called back to England now.
Yeah, you know, and it's going to be, you know, we're going to be doing our training where we train people in meditation and higher states of consciousness and also remote viewing and using the C-SETI protocols to make contact while we're in the area of where all the crop circles, the epicenter of where all the crop circles have appeared each year. We will also, and I think this is really interesting, for the first time we are going to do a puja, a sacred ceremony to bring in higher states of consciousness and cosmic awareness in the crop circles at a sacred site there in England where everyone involved in this particular event, which is going to be a rather small event, it's going to be limited to 20 people because of where we're going to be going into areas that we really can't have a larger group, but those of you who feel called to come, you can find out at cseti.org about this. And it's going to be a historic event because we will be there with Colin Andrews, who, of course, invented the term crop circle and has been providing information to the British royal family and the British government on that amazing and mysterious sort of form of contact that's been going on in England for decades. He will be there with us periodically. We'll be there with other people who are very knowledgeable about the crop circles. And we're going to visit Stonehenge. We're going to visit Silbury Hill and Avesbury. And I think most interestingly, we're going to go to this 1,800-acre farm that's in Wiltshire, in the very center of where all the crop circles have appeared, in fact, where some of the most interesting and fascinating ones have happened, where in 1992, those of you who've read Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge, and also the book Contact, you'll see that in 1992 we had about a 100-foot diameter extraterrestrial disk materialize in the field where we were located at very close range. And we're going to go back to that site here, of course, many 18 years later. But that the farmer, the people who run that estate, have given us exclusive permission to use that estate as a research site. And we also have some other research sites we'll be using near Silbury Hill, where there have been amazing events recently where, as I mentioned, craft have been seen fully formed and materialized that have blipped in and out of three-dimensional space-time, and where there have been ET beings seen in the fields and have been chased by police, unfortunately. One of the things that we feel we need to do is to educate authorities on how to respond properly to an extraterrestrial presence rather than, you know, running through a field, you know, chasing them. There should be some kind of diplomatic protocol that is known worldwide of how to respond properly, or instead of running around like chickens with their heads cut off, with, you know, either guns drawn or chasing them, there should be a different approach. And this is what we want to sort of model for the world. And this is one of the things that the Council for Interplanetary Relations will be doing, is to be providing this kind of education to people, but also to the official world in terms of a proper response to the extraterrestrial presence, as opposed to an inappropriate response, which unfortunately is often what happens, not out of any design, but simply because the officials don't know. They're not educated on the subject, and they don't have any formal training in how to respond. It would be like asking a firefighter to respond to a fire when they've never fought a fire. And it's a serious problem. In fact, I'll give you a great example. Back in the 80s, as you know from reading the disclosure materials, if you go to disclosureproject.org, you can see much of this. And one of our top secret military witnesses, Merle Shane McDowell, was at working with the Commander-in-Chief Atlantic Command in the Norfolk area. And what happened there at Atlantic Command, there was a extraterrestrial vehicle that came in from space, broad daylight, that was picked up on a radar and off the coast of Newfoundland. And it was quite large, several hundred feet at least in diameter, and it was on at least five different radar stations up and down the East Coast. Well, the Commander-in-Chief Atlantic Command, Admiral Harry Train, who at the time did not know a whole lot about this issue, but who was in charge, he was the SYNC, what we call the SYNC Commander-in-Chief, Atlantic Command, SYNC Atlantic Command. They went to a full Code Zebra alert, which is basically what they call a Code Zebra. I mean, nobody, if you don't have a zebra badge, stripes on your badge, you have to leave the command center within 60 seconds, or the Marines that are there have orders to shoot to kill after 60 seconds, anyone who's not authorized, because this is a facility that would basically engage in protocols involving thermonuclear war or some sort of major event. So they went to it wasn't a practice run, it was a full Code Zebra alert. Everyone was cleared out of there except people with clearance to be there. And the Admiral, seeing this massive object, didn't know how to respond, so he scrambled jets from multiple naval air stations up and down the east coast of North America and gave the orders to fire and force the ET craft down. Now, one of the jets got close enough that the gun cameras were able to photograph it, and our military witness actually saw these photographs. Luckily, they did not actually hit the spacecraft and down it. But the fact that such an order was given should give everyone great pause. This is exactly the kind of thing that happens when secrecy keeps even officials at a very high level, like Admiral Train, from knowing how to respond properly or what it is. His first thought was that it was some kind of secret Soviet missile, and so they got on the hotline, the red phone to the Kremlin, and said, "Is this yours?" And they said, "No, it's not ours. Is it yours?" And when it was established that it was neither American nor Soviet, then, of course, they didn't know what they were dealing with, but his knee-jerk reaction, which is often how things happen, is in the heat of the moment, and as they say, the fog of war, the order was given to down this extraterrestrial vehicle. Very dangerous thing to do, very reckless. And this has happened over and over and over and over again. It's very serious. And when I've gone to the Pentagon and met with senior admirals and generals there, there's great concern over this, because the secrecy and the compartmentalization of this subject has left many people who are in the front lines of response without an adequate knowledge of how to respond. So we need to have a group of people. I know a former minister of defense of a foreign country who we'll be inviting to be part of this council. There are a number of VIPs, if you want to look at them that way, who have experience with various governments around the world that we want to invite. I think that those of you listening may know of people you would like to suggest as well, because it's very important that we step up the pace of creating the ability for humans to respond peacefully and in an educated way, so that we don't just have bobbies running with guns drawn through the fields, or admirals, scrambling jets shooting at these extraterrestrial vehicles. That we need to move to another level of functioning, and it's time. It's clearly made very clear to me, and I think Colin Andrews, who would agree with me on this, that this is the time. We're in the sort of final sequence of the secrecy, where all of this is going to get disclosed, and we need to be prepared for an appropriate and peaceful response, so it doesn't devolve into chaos and madness like it did at Atlantic Command in 1981. So this is the sort of thing that we want to be addressing with this new Council for Interplanetary Relations, and we're hoping those of you who feel so moved will get involved and give us your ideas and suggestions. And those of you who want to join us at this international event we're going to be doing in England, like I said, it's going to, I think, be very, very historic. And also, those of you listening in Europe and other places around the world, we're going to do a three-day contact event and training in France, in Brittany, and also in July. And Linda, do you have...
July 10th through 12th.
Say that again?
July 10th through 12th.
Yeah, the 10th
Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Right. And there's something very wonderful that's happened, that people who come to this are going to be rather amazed, because we're going to be doing this during the day. We'll be, of course, meeting at a nearby hotel to do the events during the afternoon, where we teach people remote viewing and contact protocols and how to do the actual contact work. But each night we're going to go out under the stars onto an estate. It's about a 2,000-acre ancient estate in France that actually some of the early parts of the chateau of this estate were built in the 1400s, and the rest of the chateau was built in the 1600s. And the family that owns this estate are extremely supportive of what we're doing for making interplanetary relations happen. And it's a family that's been involved since the early days of the French Republic. They are extremely supportive of this work, and they will be hosting us on this estate. So this is going to be a very historic event at a place where, I might comment, the people who own this estate have actually had ET craft materialize over the chateau and were actually photographed. They have some amazing photographs of sort of a half-moon-shaped ship that appeared and descended right over the chateau. And also that the gardener, the groundskeeper for this chateau, one morning came in, and there's a pond in front of the chateau, and there was a ET craft, sort of a yellowish golden color craft, not very large, that had fully materialized briefly and then dematerialized right over the lake that's in front of the chateau. So this is an area that's had historic activity, and I think it's going to be a very exciting event for us to do this in Europe. So those of you who have been wanting us to do something over in Europe, this is an opportunity to join us. And again, you can find out the details of that event on the CSETI and Disclosure Project site. So we're just organizing those events, and we hope to see a lot of you at them. And I think that it'll be sort of a test run for the international approach to this Council on Interplanetary Relations, expanding our activities around the world further. And so we hope that there'll be a lot of participation from countries throughout Europe and perhaps even other continents who will come to France and England with us.
And I'd also like to mention, Dr. Greer earlier mentioned the CSETI photograph of the ET being, and also his briefing to President Obama, and both, there's links to both of those things at disclosureproject.org. under latest news and updates, it's the first thing you see when you open the website, and right beneath latest news and updates are links to both of those things in case you haven't seen those.
Right, right. You know, there's a wealth of information on those sites. And one of the things that's very exciting recently is that I've been in Washington pretty much every week meeting with some folks who work very closely with people in the White House and the Obama administration. And there is growing interest in this, and I see this happening in other countries as well. And so I think that by creating this council and getting people from around the world, we can have a big effect right now, because it's the old saying that if the people will lead, the leaders will follow. And I think that we need to model this and do this, if for no other reason than to show them how it's done. And also to, in the morphogenic field of consciousness, create this. So, you know, everything starts small initially, perhaps. And as Margaret Mead said, you know, don't underestimate what a few people meeting in a living room can do with a determined will and purpose, and that every great event has happened that way, that we're going to start out this way, but we need to view it in our minds as something that is a prototype, if you will, for in the future, the entire world interfacing openly and peacefully with these interstellar civilizations, because this is our where we're headed. This is the inevitable result of our evolutionary course, from, you know, tribes to city states to nations to a world, a peaceful world that's able then to become an interplanetary civilization. And this is where we're headed, into this great cosmic future. And sometimes it's hard to see, because there are still people going around clubbing each other over the heads like, cavemen. But the reality is that there has to be a pioneering effort, and we are inviting everyone listening to the World Pooja Network to be part of that pioneering effort, because we need people who are aware of higher states of consciousness and a spiritual awareness, as well as the foundations of universal peace that are established in the reality that all conscious life is really one. And this is really a philosophical underpinning of what we're doing, is that we have to understand that the awake mind within each of us, which at its core is an infinite cosmic being, is the foundation of intelligent, aware life everywhere in the cosmos, and that all of these civilizations that are visiting us are sentient beings, and they're conscious. And even though they may have IQs of 500, or they may have very different evolutionary paths, but that the fact that they're awake and that we're awake, that's the meeting ground, is in awareness and consciousness and higher states of consciousness. And this universal aspect of ourselves that's awake is really where we have to understand the foundation has to be established, and that is the foundation of what we're doing with our contact work. It is what we're actually practicing as well. That it's not only a philosophical perspective, but that the ability to experience the state of cosmic awareness enables you to then remote view and see these extraterrestrial spacecraft and their occupants, and use consciousness and thought to interface with their electromagnetic guidance systems that are transdimensional, because the transdimensional aspects of ET technologies interface with very coherent, directed thought and awareness. This is how we've had the success we've had in making contact. And even though that's something that many people who are in a reductionist and materialistic worldview will find confusing, the reality is that any civilization that's able to go faster than the speed of light is crossing over into conscious energy fields and other dimensions, if you wish to look at it that way, that correlate very, very closely to the so-called body of light or astral body that we have within us and within the realm of thought and consciousness. So these civilizations understand this reality as easily as we understand how to use our cell phone. And we need to catch up with that understanding, and that's why a big part of what we'll be doing at these events is studying how consciousness is a universal field for contact and how that can be applied and what are the sciences that deal with transdimensional reality, including the sciences of energy generation and propulsion systems. And it's all part of the same area of study, and it's a whole new field of study of not just science, but of culture and awareness and even deep spirituality. And so I think this is a really an exciting time, and I hope that all of you who have ideas of what you might be able to bring to this endeavor in our forming a global, a worldwide council for interplanetary relations dedicated to universal peace. Those of you who have ideas and suggestions of people who should be involved, who would have an interest, please let us know through our website.
You know, another thing that you've talked about a lot over the years are meta themes, and I think it's really interesting how events recapitulate. For example, you are developing this new council on interplanetary relations in the same county as where our founding fathers of America created the Declaration of Independence.
Right. It's interesting that so much of this work and the thinking and the meetings going on are right here near Thomas Jefferson's home. And you know, of course, who did write the Declaration of Independence. And, you know, it's sort of a renewal of the concepts of awareness and liberty and a new quantum leap in civilization. And it's time for that. It's time for that renewal to happen. And I think really it's been trying to emerge for 50 to 100 years, but it's been thwarted by people who want to maintain the status quo. And now it's time for us to realize that there is not going to be the possibility of protracted delays any longer, that the time is at hand for a big quantum leap in our civilization, and that part of this not only is going to be on the level of knowing that we're not alone in the universe, but also understanding the consciousness that has to go with it. You can't just drag the consciousness of division and nationalism and war into space, which is what we've been trying to do in our misguided classified projects for 50 years. And you can't drag the consciousness of the past. As Einstein said, that, you know, no problem's ever solved by the level of consciousness that created it. And we have to realize that we have to have a whole new way of thinking and truly a new paradigm of what it means to be an intelligent being in the universe. So it's this great leap into cosmic awareness and a cosmic culture that is happening, and that this has huge implications, not only culturally and socially for humanity, but also technologically, because as contact becomes more demonstrative, it's going to open up these discussions, and at times they may be painful discussions of what does it mean to be a transdimensional civilization? What are the sciences and technologies that allow for interstellar travel? You know, there was recently, I saw an article in a news magazine called The Week that was a scientist saying that we could never approach the speed of light because we'd be bombarded by radioactive particles and what have you, moving at that speed through space. And, you know, it's all based on sort of a linear view of the universe, when in reality it's a nonlinear and non-local view that's conscious and that deals with technologies that are way beyond what's currently being discussed in the world of university physics and what have you, although it's well known within classified projects. You know, ironically, I recently met with a man who works at the weird science and frickin' magic desk, as they call it, at the CIA, and you know, these ideas in consciousness and transdimensional reality are commonplace within those circles, and yet within, you know, mainstream scientific academia, they're still speaking of things really within a paradigm that's limited to the 30s and 40s. You know, they're really talking about paradigms that, you know, jet engines and rockets and things of this sort that really are a physics that we had mastered by the 40s. Of course, Wernher von Braun, who invented the V2 rocket for Hitler, that was in the early 40s. So what's happened in those intervening 70 years? So unfortunately, there's been a great deal of progress, but it's remained off the radar scope of most people. And this is one of the things that there has to be a scientific part of this Council for Interplanetary Relations that begins to entertain the implications of the science that deals with faster than the speed of light communications, faster than the speed of light travel, energy systems that are pulling energy out of these, if you will, transdimensional aspects of the cosmos, where you're having energy coming out of the expansion of space-time, for example, or the zero-point energy field, where suddenly you don't need to be burning things or splitting the atom and having nuclear waste in order to get electricity and power. These are all part of this issue, and it runs the gamut of social and political, historical, certainly technological and scientific, and also, I might add, macroeconomic, because one of the issues has been the macroeconomic question. And I think another division of this is sort of the spiritual and religious dimension. So much of the problems with dealing with this question has come from orthodoxy and religion. And some of you may recall that a few years ago I had a meeting with a senior jet propulsion lab scientist who did not want to come forward publicly, but who had personal knowledge of the so-called structures on Mars. And Richard C. Hoagland, who had been Walter Cronkite's science advisor back some years ago, is going to be joining us at our annual conference at Rio Rico
October 2nd through 4th.
Yes, October 2nd through 4th. And this is going to be an incredible event because we're going to have Richard C. Hoagland there and myself and Dr. Ted Loader talking about these new energy technologies, as well as Colin Andrews giving us an update on the events of the crop circles and contact events in England this summer. And you're all invited to that, and we're going to spend the nights out under the stars in the Arizona desert, and during the day we're going to have presentations by all these amazing speakers. And one of the things, of course, that Richard Hoagland is specialized in is the discovery of structures that have been on ancient structures, as well as perhaps some recent ones that have been on the surface of Mars. And one of the things that I discovered as I began to investigate that and talking in some of these scientific circles with a number of people who had personal knowledge of it, such as man at the Jet Propulsion Labs. And he told me very directly that the reason that wasn't being shown, the way they pixelated out those images so that people couldn't tell what they were, was because that if that was disclosed, that it would, and I'm quoting here pretty closely to what he told me. If I'm not quoting exactly, it's very, very close to what he told me. He said that the disclosure of the fact that there were these ancient structures on Mars would collapse the orthodox foundation of all the fundamentalist and orthodox belief systems of all the world's religions. And I said, well, good. I mean, if they're based on things that are distortions of fact and science and what have you, or a false myth that needs to be updated, isn't it time for a renewal of that myth? And he said, yes, it's easy to say, but there are very powerful interests who don't want it to happen. So interestingly, there are serious implications for even the world's religions dealing with this issue. So I think all of these are things that we're going to want to have people investigating and sort of writing research papers on and policy papers on. So we're going to be looking for research fellows to work with the Council on Interplanetary Relations to put all this together in a way that can help educate people in various walks of life, whether they be religious leaders or scientific people or economists or cultural and social leaders, and even artists and people. What are the arts and music of these other civilizations? What's the culture like? I mean, these are all very fascinating things to entertain.
Another thing that's really amazing about your formation of the Council for Interplanetary Relations is it fits with the message of the Orion transmissions that you translated back in Joshua Tree. And you said at that time that what we do on Earth, what humans do on Earth, is mirrored in other worlds throughout the whole universe at the same time. So it raises, what we do raises up every civilization in the universe and vice versa.
Correct. And, you know, it's sort of as below, so above, and vice versa. And I think that one of the things that's fascinating is that when you begin to look at a non-local universe, meaning that a universe that is intimately connected to each other through the organizing aspect of consciousness and conscious intelligence, that when then you begin to understand how Rupert Sheldrake's morphogenic fields work, that when there's a group of people that begin to know something or do something, it non-locally, without any direct communication, begins to inculcate that skill or that knowledge in people far, far away. And by this, it could be far, far away even in space. So, you know, because consciousness isn't limited by space-time. You know, you're not having to limit yourself to the speed of light. So, you know, the Andromeda galaxy, 2.5 million light years away, by the speed of light, it would take you 2.5 million years to get there. But at the speed of consciousness and thought, it's instantaneous. And this is, you know, when you start stepping into that non-local universe, of the conscious universe, this is a really big change in how you view things. And so when we begin to think that, you know, what we think and do on this planet not only affects everyone on this planet, each other, but also other worlds. And, you know, many people have asked me, why would the ETs even be concerned with what's happening on Earth? And it's because if you understand in an enlightened way this concept of non-locality and the intimate relations we have through the fact that we're all conscious, and that consciousness is omnipresent, and in that omnipresent consciousness, we are present everywhere in what we're doing, that what happens on Earth has consequence for other places in the universe, and there is great interest. On a policy point of view, perhaps that's a little metaphysical, but on a more practical point of view, one of the things we'd want to have for this Council for Interplanetary Relations is a look at our behavior in space. For example, how might it be viewed through the eyes of interstellar civilizations for us to be going into space with weapon systems? I can tell you that it's not viewed very kindly, and it, there's great concern. I also know that they've shown enormous restraint in that regard. Because certainly, if they were hostile, and this is the point I make to the, you know, all the people who are addicted to the good alien and bad alien scenario, I always say, look, if any civilization that can travel interstellar, if they were hostile towards us, we'd know about it. You know, this would not be hard to do. If you understand anything about what these technologies that enable you to go faster than the speed of light, what they're capable of if they were put into any kind of a hostile hands, this would not be a discussion we'd be having. It'd be over already. It would have been over when we detonated the first nuclear weapon, the first atomic bomb at the Trinity site in New Mexico in 1945. So I think that it's very important for us to understand, however, that we have gone in 60 or 70 years from not being in space and not having these sort of weapons to being in space and having these kind of weapons. And what hasn't been said to the public is that there have been enormous advances within the classified programs for not only weapon systems that the public hasn't had disclosed to them that are way past hydrogen bombs, but also energy and propulsion systems that allow for travel in space. And so it's natural that there would be some great concern, real policy concerns, I think, of how humans are handling this. Because one of my experiences, which has been not a happy experience, to be honest with you, is being with people like Senator Claiborne Pell or, you know, very senior officials at the Pentagon who were really very good people, and also meeting with people like the Honorable Paul Hellyer, who was the Minister of Defense in Canada, or Lord Hill Norton, who I spent time at his home in Hampshire there, near where we're going to be this summer. And Lord Hill Norton was a five-star admiral who had been head of the Ministry of Defense for the United Kingdom. And all of these people, every single one of them, were very interested in this subject. None of them had been given any information on it, nor did they have any control over what was going on, not even these ministers of defense and secretaries of defense or CIA directors that I've met with. And so what you have is a disconnect where you don't have some of the people, not everyone in these positions are, you know, enlightened folks, but many of them are actually. And to be with these sorts of senators and these sorts of leaders in the military world or in government who would have taken a different approach to the extraterrestrial presence, would have taken an enlightened approach, a diplomatic approach. These people have been robbed of the opportunity to do so because of the secrecy. And we need to change that. And the Council on Interplanetary Relations, and this Council for Interplanetary Relations, is going to be something where these sort of people can come together and act together in lieu of the governments acting reasonably. Now, we hope, of course, that'll change. We hope at some point that the United Nations or some international body and some of these governments around the world will take a open diplomatic approach to this issue. That has not happened yet, and it's 2010, and it's way past the time when it should have. I mean, this should have been established at least by 1950. So we're at least 60 years late. So people say, well, this is very futuristic, what you're proposing. I said, well, yes and no. I mean, it's actually a little, I mean, it really should have been established before I was born because I'm not 60 years old. So the issue is really what your perspective is. But from my perspective, this is something that's long overdue, long past due, and it's time for us to do it. And so those of you who have suggestions for people who can work in these various aspects of what we want to do with this council, it's a peace council, if you want to look at it, like the Native American peace councils, but also in this case, it's a council for interplanetary relations, and that will be focused on establishing open contact and peaceful relations with these civilizations. And this is a really, really big step for us to take, and it's time for us to do it, because it's, I think there's, we've done enough study, we have enough proof that they're here, and CSETI now has 20 years of a track record of formulating ways to make contact. Now we need to go to the next level, and this is it. This is the next level. So it's a very exciting time.
But just kind of to review the categories for the advisory board, and this is just a sampling that I've written down that you've mentioned, science and technology, arts and culture, spirituality and religion, economics, military and law enforcement.
Right. And, of course, diplomacy. You know, people who are skilled in the in diplomacy, and that's a very key thing. You look at if you go to the State Department or to the UN, there is no office that's dealing overtly with the fact that we're being visited. Well, how crazy is that? I mean, we have ambassadors to every tiny country in the world, but we don't have ambassadors dealing with the fact that we have other worlds visiting us. I find that very odd. And so that's something that this will be addressing very directly. And that's at the highest level of what the Council for Interplanetary Relations will be doing, is dealing with the relationship between Earth and humanity and these other civilizations, because someone needs to take it seriously and do something about it that's serious. I know that they're waiting for this. There's no question in my mind that these extraterrestrial civilizations are waiting for this. And it really is stepping off into an amazing future to contemplate doing this on a global scale. And we hope that many of you will be able to join us in some capacity, those of you who have different skills or talents to bring to this, or know of people who do, please let us know. That's how it's going to go forward. And one of the things is that everyone who comes to these ambassador to the universe trainings are going to be research associates, because they will be trained in the art and the science of contact, and we will make all the people who have been on these expeditions and been trained as ambassadors to the universe as research associates, because one of the things that's very important is that most people go to workshops and, oh, it's an interesting workshop, and then you go home and that's it. This is very different. Our perspective is that we want to have people who are involved with this, because when they get trained to be an ambassador and have the experiences they do, such as what we're going to be doing in a few weeks at the Outer Banks. By the way, those of you who want to come, we're going to be on the Outer Banks of North Carolina for a week.
April 11th through 17th.
Yeah, the 11th through the 17th of April, and we're going to be meeting at this beautiful house right on the ocean on the Outer Banks and on the Atlantic Ocean. It's always great because we always have lots of dolphins that come visit us, and we go out to this wildlife refuge at night where we have amazing contact events that happen. Last year we had this object that came from space and went right into the water, and then these lights came right up on the beach, and for an hour, visible to everyone, they were there signaling with us, and we filmed them. And so it was something I like out of a science fiction movie, but that happened last year in 2009 at this site. And we're going to be there, and then, of course, in Crestone, Colorado, we're going to be in the San Luis Valley, which is the mysterious valley there near Crestone, Colorado, just north of the Great Sand Dunes. And
June 13th through 19th.
Right, June 13th through 19th. And what we're going to be doing in June and from the 13th to the 19th is going to this place that some of the very early contact events happened. We've been going there since 1993. And we're going to be up at about 8,000 feet. And during the afternoon, we're going to be doing training and meditation and remote viewing and contact. But at night, every night, we're going to go out under the stars. And it's just amazing there because you're up so high. And we're also going to be going up to Blanca Peak, which is the sacred mountain of the east for the Western tribes, Native American tribes. And it's called the Bloodless Valley because no wars were ever fought there. It was a place of peace. And we know that there's been an ancient ET connection to this area, and we have had amazing contact that has happened in that area around Crestone and up on Blanca Peak. So we're going to be doing that in June, and then, of course, in July we'll be in England and France. And then in August we're going to be up on Mount Shasta in California, and that's a stunning place. And the events that have happened there, those of you who've gotten the new book, Contact Countdown to Transformation, it has a DVD that you can get with it if you order it. It's free with the book at disclosureproject.org. And it has amazing images of objects and craft that have come very close to us while we've been doing our work at Mount Shasta. And we're going to be there in August.
August 8th through 14th.
Right, that's right. And then we'll be in Arizona at Rio Rico for our large conference with Richard Hoagland and Colin Andrews and myself and Dr. Loader. In October, and then in November, we'll be back at Joshua Tree, where we've had so many amazing things happen. So it makes me tired thinking about it. But anyway, that's what we'll be doing this year.
A lot.
And we hope that those of you who are so moved will join us for some of these, and at a minimum, keep us in your thoughts and prayers, and also keep our world leaders in your thoughts and prayers. I will tell you that there is positive. There are very positive developments happening on the front with people very close to the Obama administration. There's also very great progress being made with this G7 country. You know, the G7 countries are the seven top industrialized countries, and one of them for a couple of years have been talking to us about formalizing a contact event with their government to make open contact with the ETs, and that is also being advanced quite rapidly this year. And the other thing that's advancing rapidly is that, as all of you know, beginning in December, we had a amazing thing happen where this top secret scientist has begun to work with us. And so that's all... and I can say that we're making very, very good progress on the energy development front. So these are all things happening this year, and if you can keep your thoughts and prayers with us as we go forward.
And I'd just like to mention, lastly, that there still are two or three spaces left at the Outer Banks training in North Carolina, April 11th through 17th. And interestingly, we'll be contacting ETs and ET craft right near the location of Kitty Hawk, where the Wright brothers flew the first motorized aircraft back in 1903. So.
Yeah, there's some great irony with that,
yeah.
Because we actually go right by that site where the Wright brothers made the first flight. And one of the beautiful things about that area is that it has, you know, the sort of the origins of modern flight right there. And here we are in sort of within 100 years or so doing this kind of work with ET craft and beings coming around us. And one of the exciting things that's happened, we've had recently someone join our team who's very skilled at photography, digital photography, who has been getting some amazing photographs with cameras by setting them at certain settings and leaving the shutter open with them on tripods. And when we were at Boca Grande, we had a number of not only craft but ET beings, actual people, very close to the group that were imaged. And we'll be coming out with that soon, but it's sort of amazing what's happening with the contact and the ability to document it that's occurred just in the last, since November, really.
Right.
In the last 4 months. So God only knows what the rest of this year will hold, but, you know, we always tell people no two of these events are alike, and there's something mind-blowing and new that happens at every one of them.
Right.
And the bigger picture of what we're doing, aside from what we may see and or hear or what have you, is that we're, you know, people are being trained to be able to go back home to wherever they live and form a team, a contact team, and be an ambassador to the cosmos from humanity and being engaged on a level, a very high level of consciousness and understanding of science and physics and the science of consciousness and make this sort of contact. And there are people who have done this, and they've gotten the meditation and the contact CDs that we have at disclosureproject.org and gone out with a couple of friends and have had astonishing contact happen. I mean, amazing things happen. So we tell people that this is the kind of effort that's needed, because it does create this morphogenic field where by having more and more people do this, it begins to tilt and move all of human awareness in the direction of open contact and peaceful contact. And it really is about manifesting the future. And people don't realize how powerful each of us are in our thoughts and our actions, and particularly when we gather together. You know, when we're sitting alone, we sometimes lose sight of that. But when we work together, there's sort of an exponential increase. And this is, you know, the studies that Dr. John did at Princeton and the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research Lab, the PEER Lab, you know, he found that when there are people who are united or love each other, engage in something with their awareness, that the effect it has, even on a mechanical system, is exponential. It's not just additive. It's not like 1 and 1 is 2. It's like 1 and 1 is 10. And so when you have a group of 30 or 40 people out under the stars meditating and going into cosmic awareness and doing the kind of meditations we do in contact, it has an enormous effect. And if you do this when you return home from these ambassador trainings with a small group of people, 3 or 4 people, it just has a hugely potentiating effect. And this is really how we manifest a good future and a new future, a future of universal peace, free energy, new energy, and a whole new paradigm. And only so much can happen on the level of intellect, and so much has to happen on the level of heart and higher states of consciousness. And that's where enormous change happens in ways that are kind of mysterious on one level, but which we can really understand now. There's been very good research to demonstrate how these morphogenic fields are propagated, and that we're all part of this big process together.
Amazing.
Well, I think it's been about an hour. I'd like to thank the Whirlpoojia Network for hosting us, and I wanted to take today to announce that we're in the early formative stages of the Council on Interplanetary Relations. Please give us your suggestions or nominations of people who you think should be involved at these various levels. And it's a whole new order of magnitude of what's happening, because it's time for us to now go from sort of an ad hoc group to a true global force for peace and universal peace, and it's time for it to happen now. So I thank all of you for your support and your prayers and thoughts and your actions in joining us in this great undertaking. And thank you, Linda, for joining us and giving us
these
updates. All right, till next time, this is Conversations with Dr. Stephen Greer. You're listening to the World Pooja Network, and thanks again to all the wonderful people at the World Pooja Network for hosting us here. Until next time, goodbye.